You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Our healthcare system is big and it's complicated. And as the ongoing debate over the Affordable Care Act suggests, there's a lot of room for disagreement. But when it comes down to those basics, there are a lot of things that just seem like common sense, things we can all agree on. We should get our physicals, get screened for common types of cancer. When there's something wrong, treat it as soon as possible before it gets out of hand.
Just one problem, according to our next guest, those and other bits of common sense are often wrong. Worse, they drive us to medical care that's expensive and that can actually make us less healthy, not more.
Dr. H. Gilbert Welch joins us now. He's a professor at Dartmouth Medical School. His newest book is Less Medicine, More Health, Seven Assumptions That Drive Too Much Medical Care. Dr. Welch, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Now, before we dig into the particular assumptions you're working to try to turn around, it all feels kind of counterintuitive. Are we really in a situation in our healthcare system where we're commonly getting medical care that can do more harm than good?
I think the answer is yes. Many doctors are worried about the problems caused by too much medical care. In fact, a recent survey suggested that nearly one half of primary care physicians believe their patients receive too much medical care. And I want to be clear, some people don't get enough, but we're recognizing that the conventional concern about too little medical care now needs to be balanced by a concern about too much. And I want to be clear, medical care can do a lot of good in selected settings, but it can also harm people in others. And that's why I wrote the book, to try to help communicate those nuances in a sense of balance.
And what drives all of this? As you say, a lot of doctors are worried about the problems of too much care. Is it insurance? Is it pharmaceutical companies? Where is this drive coming from?
Well, it comes from a whole lot of sources. Doctors would say, you know, their first response might be lawyers. Lawyers are creating the problems, and lawyers do certainly add pressures to doctors. The economists would say it's about economics, that systems and doctors are paid more to do more, so that leads to too much being done. But it's more than either of those two explanations, because of messaging that's been going on over the past 30 or 40 years. The public has been taught and has now sort of written to their hard drive assumptions about the value of medical care that are excessive. And that's part of it was dealing with those assumptions that led me to want to write the book.
Let's start digging into those assumptions now. And the tricky thing is a lot of these really feel like common sense, You're trying to overcome a lot here. So the first one you tackle is the idea that all risks can be lowered, and I think all risks should be lowered. Why is that a problematic assumption?
Yeah, and again, there's nuance here. Medical care can reduce some risks, and the effort is most likely to be successful when the risk is high. Like, you know, someone who has in the next 5 years a 50% chance of something bad happening to them. Medical care can sometimes reduce that kind of risk dramatically, as this is the case in people with really, really high blood pressure. But the truth is most of us aren't at really high risk. We're at average risk. Our chance of something bad happening in the next 5-10 years is a matter of 2 or 3%. And it's hard to lower a small risk. And the problem is that almost all of our interventions have the potential to hurt people. And it's when we start trying to reduce risks in people who are already at fairly low or average risk begins to cause problems. And we learned that from being too aggressive with treating people's blood sugar and blood pressure and actually evidence now that we can increase mortality in people, particularly in the elderly.
Well, yeah, you mentioned extremely high blood pressure. Okay, that's a case where some intervention, some medication, say, might be worthwhile.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we've seen dueling recommendations, though, for people with slightly high blood pressure, average.
That's right, and absolutely right. And I think one of the things that people may be getting to get a sense of is that there's a considerable debate within the medical profession, and there is an effort to sort of undergo a course correction now that a few years ago we were much more aggressive about blood pressure control, and now there's a growing set of recommendations that are not as stringent, and I think that's a very healthy thing. And that's again one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, is so people understood why we might be pulling back on some of the things we had originally suggested, because we now recognize if we try to reduce all risks, we end up creating risk.
Because the medications involved in this case might have some side effects, I imagine?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Well, a related assumption is that, hey, if we find anything that's a problem, we should try to fix it. We should try to fix it now before it becomes a big problem.
That's right. And this is really sort of hardwired to our sort of mechanical approach. You know, if there's a problem, let's fix it. If the sink is clogged, let's fix it. And the effort to fix a problem also tends to confer some risk. It tends to mean that we need to do an operation or a invasive procedure to fix problems. And this is probably most dramatic in cardiovascular disease, where, you know, to fix the problem, we're inserting wires and we're blowing up balloons and we're placing stents. And that may be a good thing for someone who's having an acute heart attack. It looks like it is a good thing. But most of these procedures are not being done in people who are having heart attacks. They're doing in people who have angina or maybe just abnormal arteries. Well, now we know from a variety of randomized trials that one in angina, doesn't help people live longer or have less angina. And it does have some upfront risks, and then people need to be in anticoagulants. These are the kind of things where you want to say, if the problem isn't that big, you don't want to be fixing it. You want to be managing it. You want to see how it goes. And so it's important for people to ask about options and start slow. You know, don't always go to the most dramatic solution right off the bat. See if the problem can be managed.
And you mentioned the research outcomes and what we can base treatments on. There's less conclusive research on a lot of medical issues that I, as a layperson, would have assumed.
Absolutely, yes. A lot of what we do in medicine doesn't have a strong evidence base. It's hard to get an evidence base for everything, and we're still feeling our way. And that's why one of the reasons, because there's always going to be uncertainty in healthcare, it's one of the reasons that if you don't have a problem that's really severe, you want to make sure the solution isn't more dangerous than the problem itself.
Well, I want to get into an issue you've been talking about for a long time. You've been on our network talking about this before,
yeah.
The idea that it never hurts to get more information, that more screenings, more early screenings, more preventive screenings are always a good thing. Talk
yeah.
about that a little.
Yeah, sure. The assumption that I think you're really referring to is that sooner is always better. And this has been a, something that's been bred into people for years, that you want to be looking for early forms of disease, particularly a feared disease like cancer. But our understanding of cancer is changing, and we're recognizing that it's a very heterogeneous group of disorders, and that a lot more of us have it than we ever recognized. And this leads me to what's been called the barnyard pen of cancers. And in this barnyard, there are three animals. There are the birds, the rabbits, and the turtles. And the idea of early detection is to try to fence these animals in. Well, it's hard to fence in a bird because the bird's already gone. It flies away. And that represents the most aggressive cancers, the cancers that are growing really fast, the cancers that have already spread to distant parts of the body by the time they're detectable. The issue there isn't early detection. The question is, can we treat those cancers? The rabbits are hopping around. If you build enough fences, you can catch them. That's where screening will arguably have its best effect. And then there are the turtles. Those are the cancers that aren't going anywhere anyway. And the unfortunate reality is screening's really good at detecting turtles. Doctors don't know which cancers are turtles, so they end up treating all of them. And that means a lot of people can be treated for cancers that are never going to bother them. And the reality is now there are actually a lot of turtles out there to find. About a third to a half of adults will have small thyroid cancers. Around a third of women age 40 to 50 will have small breast cancers, the earliest form of breast cancer, ductal carcinoma in situ, and over half of men over age 60 have small prostate cancers. If we start looking aggressively for these cancers, we'll find them and we'll treat all these people, and that won't be good.
So does it save lives to detect these things early and get treatment before they get out of hand, given that some of them are going to be, as you say, turtles?
This is a burning question, and this is, as many of your listeners will know, it's a considerable debate about whether prostate cancer screening helps a few men or not. Same true with breast cancer screen. Does it help a few women or not? My belief is both do, and it's a very few, on the order of less than 1 per 1,000 screened over 10 years. But it also hurts other people. It leads many to have false positive results, will have subsequent testing, and it leads another group to be treated for cancer unnecessarily and have all the side effects associated with that treatment. That's why screening is a really close call, and that's why it's a choice. It's not a public health imperative. And if you are going to engage in screening, my suggestion is take your time. Now, if you have an abnormal test, take your time. Get a follow-up test in a few months. See if something really is growing. If someone tells you that you have a cancer, take your time. Maybe have another pathologist look at the lesion. Maybe consider the various options and make sure you don't have more treatment than you really need.
We're talking to Dr. H. Gilbert Welch about his new book, Less Medicine, More Health.
And you can join in with your questions and thoughts for our guest. As a patient, a family member, or a healthcare provider, have you seen the problems that our guest is talking about? Do you think we're too quick to try something, medications or surgery? Or have you seen the value of early screenings and preventive care? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation with Dr. H. Gilbert Welch about his new book, Less Medicine, More Health, 7 Assumptions That Drive Too Much Medical Care. He says things that might sound like common sense, like early detections and screening, can actually do more harm than good.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you seen this in your life, maybe as a patient or a family member of somebody who's receiving medical treatment, or somebody on the healthcare side? The gut reaction, test more, treat more, give the prescription, do the surgery. Do you think we've gone too far in that direction? Or do you have a story on the other side where maybe an early detection, you think, made a big difference in your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Dr. Welch, we heard from Chris on Facebook, who writes, my fiance is a pediatrician. In that field, the majority of healthcare fields, sooner is better. Seeing doctors about issues is better than self-diagnosis or waiting too long. For example, managing diabetes is cheaper and better than waiting to have your foot cut off. What drives healthcare cost, Chris says, is waiting. Instead of something being cheap to fix, it turns into a 5-day hospital stay. What do you think about that, Dr. Welch?
Well, there's two issues here. One, does it save money to take an anticipatory approach? And then the second question is, does it help people? And I think the more important question is, does it help people? But let me first deal with the question of saving money. And the issue is, whenever we start looking for early problems, we start involving a much broader group of people. We always then end up finding more patients, and we do a lot more to people. And that's very much been true with mammography. We end up doing more surgery and more biopsies. That does not save money. You involve so many more people in the system. But if I said, the central question is, does it help people? And the truth is, it has a mixture of effects. It may help a few, but it also leads others to be treated unnecessarily. And I know a lot of people will say, well, geez, it's better to be safe than sorry. But one of the questions is, that's really not known, is which is the safer course? Because a lot of people can get involved in medical care and end up in places they do not want to be, facing choices they wish they never would have had to face, and suffer from side effects from our interventions.
Another assumption, as we get back to your seven assumptions here, is that action is better than inaction, kind of a do something rather than nothing mentality. How does that get us into trouble?
Yeah, this is the chapter where I deal with surgery, which is the most dramatic action we have in medical care. And in fact, all surgery involves trauma. And of course, that's why we use the term, you need to recover from surgery. And ironically, the surgery can impair the body's ability to heal. Now, sometimes you're acutely injured and you're bleeding internally. You know, you definitely want surgery to stop the bleeding. But one area that where there's been an awful lot of surgery where we now realize we've probably gone well over what makes any sense is back surgery. And we now know that, first, the back's an extraordinarily complex place with a lot of little small muscles tying the vertebrae together. And back surgery creates trauma to this area and has the unfortunate side effect of taking acute back pain and making it into chronic back pain. And we now recognize that most back pain shouldn't receive back. You know, it's a place where we've done way too much surgery, and we've actually made lives worse for patients. And that the right answer for most back pain is inaction. Not inactivity, but inaction. Watchful waiting, let people be active, not go to bed. And let the body heal on its own. And I think that's just one of the general problems with our belief structures around medical care is we've sort of negated the body's ability to recover on its own. People get interventions. They believe they got better because of the interventions, when in fact another possibility is they would have improved as well on their own.
We heard from Kim on Facebook. Kim says, I work in ophthalmology, see patients all the time that come in wanting extra testing and so on because they feel their symptoms couldn't be something simple or unexplainable. Sometimes, Kim writes, we have aches, pains, or other symptoms that are just nothing. That's not what the patients want to hear. I think internet access has a lot to do with it. So, Dr. Welch, how much are patients driving this temptation to test and do procedures?
Patients are certainly part of the recipe here. As I said, there's a lot of parts to this recipe. There are lawyers, there's the economic system that tends to pay more if we do more, and then patients have these assumptions, which I'm not blaming them for, because for many ways, this is what they've been taught. There's been messages, whether it's on the internet or whether it's on TV or whether it's on magazines, that sort of systematically exaggerates the benefits of healthcare and minimizes the harms. I want to come back. Medical care can be really important for those, particularly for those who are acutely ill and injured, what you might call acute care medicine. We can do a lot of good for people. But in many other settings, we have exaggerated the benefits and understated the harms of medical interventions. And so, particularly people who feel well, you ought to be very cautious about the medical care system, because the reality is it's very hard for us to make a well person feel better. But even if you are sick, you want to go slow, you want to take time, understand your options. You certainly don't always want the newest thing. You'd rather have things, I think, that are well understood, have an established track record, and safety record.
Now, as we wrap up, it seems like phrases like the one you mentioned earlier, watchful waiting, I've heard that more and more in recent years. Do you think that there's a change in the works in the medical community that may improve these assumptions you've been talking about?
Yeah, I'm actually pretty optimistic that we're in the midst of a course correction in medicine right now. More and more doctors understand these problems. And more patients do, too, and quite frankly, the news media understands them better. And it's all about finding a balance. It's about having a moderation and understanding that, that more medical care isn't always better. It can lead to bad things happening. And so while you want to approach the system when things are acutely wrong, for sure, you want to be much more hesitant when everything is going well.
Well, Dr. Welch, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed being with you.
That was Dr. H. Gilbert Welch. He's a professor at Dartmouth Medical School. We've been talking about his newest book. It's called Less Medicine, More Health, 7 Assumptions That Drive Too Much Medical Care. You can keep the conversation going, by the way, over at the Central Time Facebook page.